I'm a parent educator. Mostly what I do now is writing and speaking in the field of parenting. I used to work in the community college system in Washington State, and now I have the luxury of working from home and going out to schools to speak. And that's how I came to this topic, that one day I was home, I take a nap every day, and it was about 1 o'clock, and I just drifted off to sleep, and the phone rang. And so, you know, usually I take the phone off the hook, but I didn't this day, and I don't know why. But anyway, I picked up the phone, and I said, hello, you know, kind of groggy, and you know, sweet young mom on the end of the phone, other end of the phone, and she said, hi, my name is so-and-so and so-and-so from elementary school on the east side of Seattle, and would you be able to come to our school and talk about raising entitled children? And I said, I was awake, and I said, don't you mean resisting raising children who feel entitled? And she said, yeah, that's what I mean. And so anyway, I said, well, yeah, I had never spoken on that topic, but it was of interest to me. I said, yeah, I could probably come to your school and talk about that. So we, you know, settled on a date, and it was in April 2 years ago. And so that night in Seattle, it was, if you can believe it, it was sleet and snow and cold as I was going from, I live on 33 Point, which is west of the airport, over to the east side. I mean, it was horrible weather. And I just thought, there are not going to be any parents at this school, and, you know, I'm going over there, and I'm tired, and I really don't want to do this anyway, and it's a new topic. And so I walked into this gymnasium at this elementary school, and there were 200 parents there. And I knew that I had hit on a topic that was of interest to people, and since then, I've probably been to 25 schools on the east side of Seattle and many private schools around Seattle. So, and I think it's going to go into I'm going to write up a series of articles for Disney Online, because that's who I write for now. Anyway, so that's how I got into this topic. And so to get us set, I've got tons of information. I want to give you ways to resist raising children who feel entitled. But before we do that, I'd like to hear from you. What does a child who feels entitled act like? How do you know that they have this air about them that they feel entitled? Yes?
Well, this was a few years ago, but I was with a friend who's got really entitled kids, and we'd been swimming, and this little boy was just demanding to me, you know, Mom, get this, I'm cold, do this, and she was running around trying to figure out what he needed. And my son looked at me, and he said, is she his servant?
Oh. Yes.
Straight from the mouths of babes.
Out of the mouths of babes, yeah. Okay, there we go. So what else? How else does a child, how do they behave? How do you know they have that air of entitlement about them?
Unhappy with what they have.
Pardon?
Unhappy with what they have.
They want more, that kind, yeah, definitely. Okay, you have?
It's not showing gratitude.
Right, I think, and that's probably what really gets us as parents. You know, we think, if we do this, then will they feel grateful? If we do this, then will they feel grateful? And yeah, it's hard when we see that. Yeah. Okay. What else? Why? How else does it? Yes.
Wasteful and not respecting the things that they have.
Right. Now, so they get a new toy and they'll use it for a while and it breaks and then they just want another one. That kind of thing, yeah, or they're wasteful with everything from water to food to, yeah, all of those kinds of things. Okay, good. What else?
Acting surprised when you say no.
Acting surprised. Yeah, that they just feel, I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot to this, and really what I'm going to focus on today is ways that we can combat raising entitled children, but I think it's not just, it is about things and having more. We live in a culture of that, and, you know, the American culture, we could get into political issues if we wanted to, which I do not want to, but, you know, we as Americans have an air of entitlement, and so we have to, you know, kind of recognize that. But it's not just things. It's, well, I have the right to use my cell phone anytime I want, or I have the right to use the computer anytime I want, or I have the right to go where I want, and it's that kind of attitude that I think that catches us off guard, and then we think, whoa, you know, how did I get here? And so let's think about that for a minute. How do kids get there? How do they get to that sense of entitlement. What happens? Yes.
We give in.
We give in, yeah. And because it's the parenting path of least resistance. I mean, you know, to pull out your credit card or just to do it because we're tired and does it really matter? And then all of a sudden, you know, you see that you've created habits and a lifestyle that children have become to expect. And in many ways, it's really not that their fault. I mean, you know, one of my stories was when I was raising my kids. My husband and I always took our children on vacation. And I mean, I worked, my husband worked, we enjoyed our kids. And, you know, usually we go someplace spring vacation, usually somewhere in the summer. And that's just the way we always did it. And so then one time, when my daughter was about 15, my husband and I decided to go to Mexico on our own, you know. So, I wish, and this is a nice, you know, teenager, basically nice teenager, responsible, and she's certainly a nice young woman now, but if she, you know, she stood in the kitchen and said, what do you mean you're going to Mexico without us? Well, where do we get to go? I mean, she was just living, and when I think back on it, you know, she was insulted because a big change had occurred in her life, and she couldn't figure out why we were doing this and how selfish of us not to include them. So obviously we had made some mistakes, right? Because this is what she had. And, you know, if she were standing here, she'd say, yeah. I mean, right now, she'll be 40. She'd say, I still can't figure out why they did that. Anyway, so you can see how it begins to happen. And then all of a sudden, when we say no, when we draw that line in the sand, then of course they're going to have an emotional response to that, and we'll get to that in a little while. Okay, so it becomes a habit. Other kinds of things it's how not saying no, giving in. What else leads to children who feel entitled?
Seeing what other kids have or seeing what's on the TV.
Media. Absolutely. That the media and what other kids have, they're bombarded with it. And they're, I mean, American marketing is very, very skilled at targeting children as as consumers. And so, yeah, and peer pressure, they have it. And so those kinds of things are really hard to combat, okay? What else? Anything else? Yes.
Cause and effect between asking for something and receiving it, so they begin to expect things rather than hope for.
Right. Yeah. And we're part of the problem that, yeah, if I do this, then I get this, and it can be a variety of things. It could be whining begins to work, and so then we, you know, give into that, or it could be temper tantrums, or it could be pleading, or it could be it tugs at our heartstrings sometimes, too. It's like, oh, she feels so bad. This is just obviously distressing her so much. Okay, I'll just do it for her. And it's out of love. And then all of a sudden we realize that we've created this, you know, problem. So what do we do about it? That's the big question. And also, you know, on the other hand, what does a child, not all, that's the other thing. About living in a home, I was talking with, I don't know, one of you probably out around Holden, that in one family, you can get the child who emulates your worker bee persona, and they don't have that air of entitlement. And then another child in the same home can take on that air of entitlement, and it's really interesting to me. And so, you know, part of that is just, you know, the way it is, because all children are different. But what does a child who is grateful? I mean, do some of you have children who are grateful? Describe.
My family is this way. My oldest son has been helpful since he was born, practically. Uh-huh. You know, as soon as he could help, he was helping. Uh-huh. He just wanted to. My younger son, my older one is 17, my younger one is 13, four mm-hmm. years apart, mm-hmm. is the least helpful kid I have ever met. Mm-hmm. And he gets so angry and ugly when I ask him to participate in supporting the family by taking out the garbage.
Wow.
Please.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's exactly what it has. So, and so, anybody else have a child who is grateful, who appears grateful? I see somebody. Yes.
Yeah, we've got. Well, and we're the same. It's our oldest who feels really entitled, and our youngest who's, and he just, you know, like he looks for ways to participate. You know,
uh-huh.
It's like, I'll say, gosh, you got to get the lawn mowed. I'll do that. You know,
wow.
Just, and my daughter, it's sort of, you know, you have to list the chores, and then you have to say nothing else happens Saturday until the chores. Or,
uh-huh.
You know, and it's just that real, it's
yeah.
just so different.
Right,
and,
right.
But the grateful one is just, it's pretty pleasant.
It's a real
yeah.
pleasure.
That's right.
So therefore, we know it's not us, right? It's just anybody else want to describe a grateful child? Yes.
My oldest as well has very always been the same way, and I think it's more that he likes to give than to receive, and
yeah.
I think our youngest boy is a little bit more likes to receive. He doesn't like, he gets something, he doesn't want to share it.
Right.
Whereas my oldest boy, you get something, he wants to share it.
Yeah.
So it's maybe the giving and receiving too that kind of gets that attitude between entitled or not entitled.
Yeah.
He's entitled to his candy, and then he gets to keep it himself versus giving it and feeling good about it. So.
And so, and it's interesting because I don't think it's an issue of birth order. I mean, I think we could begin to think that way because she said it was her oldest versus her youngest, and you say it's your youngest versus your older. So I don't think it's that. I think it's embedded in some children's personality. Who knows why? I really don't know. But you know, there are things I think that we can do to combat it, whether we can do it totally or not. But so let me give you some of the ways that we can combat that feeling of entitlement, and I'll give you some insights into kids as we go along. And if please, if you have questions, I'm going to kind of run through my material, but if you have questions or comments, please, you know, just jump in and ask. Okay, so one of the things that's really important, and I think you'll recognize this, I mean, when I was raised, there was no question that my parents were in charge and that we were the kids, that there was a clear differentiation between who were the adults and who were the children. And I see that that line is more confusing these days. And when I was teaching this class, and one mom raised her hand, she said, you know, she said, it became perfectly clear to me that my child didn't recognize that he was on a different plane than my husband and I when we walked into a hotel one time and he jumped in the middle of the king-size bed and said, this is such a great bed. This is where I'm sleeping. Mom and Dad, where are you going to sleep? I mean, he really thought he was entitled to the king-size bed in the hotel room. And so it's the relationship between parent and child is a vertical relationship. Because we're adults and we're responsible, we hold a different position than children do. Not that we don't always want to consider children's desires and needs and feelings and all of that, but there are certain things that adults make decisions about that children are not capable of making decisions about. I had one mom, and this is a mother with a PhD in cognitive psychology, but still she's a mom, and their value is to go to church. And they took their toddler, a two-year-old, to church, and he didn't like it, so they chose then not to go to church anymore. That's not a decision for a two-year-old, I'm sorry, to make. And so, which school your child attends? My daughter was going to send my granddaughter to a neighborhood school, and now she's going to go to a magnet school in Seattle, and Amelia, the granddaughter, was upset because she had seen this school, and that's where she had her in her mind where she was going to go. And my daughter called me, and she said, Mom, it's right that I choose this school, right? And I said, absolutely, you are the adult here. You know what's best for her. Where to go on vacation. Of course, children can have their input, but ultimately, adults choose that, parents choose that. Whether to move or not, of course, you take into consideration your child's thoughts and feelings and all of that, but that's a decision adults make. Safety issues of what to do regarding your family's values, those are all things that we as the adults, the responsible adults, and there's probably many more, those are just a few things. So we make these decisions for our children, even if it makes them unhappy. temporarily, okay? And I think that's the hardest thing for parents today to deal with, is that they'll say, well, you know, I really need to make this decision for my child, but she's going to be unhappy. If you know your decision is right, go ahead and make it, and then you have to deal with that temporary unhappiness that the child's facing, because you're not always going to get both your decision for what's right for your child and your child's happiness at the same time. And I call it temporary because usually it's a resistance that children feel just because they don't like change, or they just don't know what it's about that we're embarking on. So feel confident that it's, and I'm going to give you ways, I'm not going to leave you without some skills on how to do that. Anyway, so that's one thing. Keep that there's a difference. Just remember that it's a vertical relation from parent to child, and it's a horizontal relationship from peers to peers. We have a horizontal relationship here, but mostly between, and that changes as kids get older, but that's basically where it is. Okay. So the second thing I want to talk about before we go any further is parental guilt, okay? Guilt and parenting go hand in hand, all right? There's not a parent in this room who doesn't feel guilty about some aspect of your parenting. And so you got to get over it, all right? And so if you've done something, said something, we've all done that, apologize to your child, make up for it, read two stories in bed, take them to the park twice in a week rather than once in a week, do a little something, and then be relieved of that guilt, because there's no child who can resist taking advantage of a parent who feels guilty, okay? And so if you feel guilty about something, and we all do from time to time, your child can't help but prey on that guilt. And so we want to get rid of it because it's going to get in the way. All right, so here's some of the things that can really help you to raise a child who doesn't feel entitled. First is to recognize it's best not to give children whatever they want, okay? And I'm going to tell you about the long-term outcomes of children. I mean, we don't want to be capricious with this. I mean, if a child asks for something, we don't want to say no and think, even though it's a reasonable request, we don't want to say no just because, you know, we want to keep them from a feeling of entitlement. It's something we need to consider, children's, you know, desires and needs and all that. But to know that it's probably not in the child's best interest to give them whatever they want. It's also best to provide some limits and restraints on children. Children feel safe and secure when they have reasonable limits. And of course, those limits need to expand as children travel the developmental years. But again, just to understand that you can say no, you can provide limits, and the long-term outcomes for children will be better. Another way to resist raising children who feel entitled is to teach them how to acquire things on their own. That, oh, you want a new bicycle, all right? You have a bicycle that works perfectly, you know, it's really good, and in fact, your brother has one that you'll inherit in a while, but you want this new one, and so I'm not willing to pay for that. So how can you figure out a way to earn that on your own? And so, yes?
Oh, Iris, I'm sorry. Iris is curious as to what age does that type of thing work for?
Yeah, you can start in very small increments as young as age 3. I mean, not a bicycle, that's too big, right? But if your child has, you know, 2 or 3 Barbies and they want another Barbie doll, and you say, you know, we have 3 Barbie dolls at home and I'm not going to spend money. No, I'm not going to do that. But, you know, grandma gives you money for your birthday, or you can do a little chore feeding the dog or whatever, and you can earn that. So you can start at a very young age. Just remember that young children, little children, have a hard time thinking ahead even a month.
Right.
And so they need more reinforcement. So daily they need to be able to put a quarter in a jar to earn, I don't know, $7 or whatever, that kind of thing. But I think you can start. And parents do. I mean, you know, you say to a child, well, you've had two cookies, and so we're going to save the other two for tomorrow. So that's, you know, that's helping children to learn to delay gratification. Yes.
I've discovered with our daughter particularly that that's a very good way to figure out how much she really wants something.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for all of us, you know, I mean, these are like, you know, if you think, oh boy, you know, I really want a new car, you know, like my neighbor has, and you think, how much did that cost? And do I really want to sacrifice other things that I enjoy for that? And so that's what that thought process is all about, and kids really need to see that. Okay, another one is, it's best to expect children to work to do chores, to save for something, or just because they live in a house and dirty dishes and laundry. And so, I mean, I have to tell you this story. I was out at a school in a fairly upscale neighborhood in Seattle, and a mom, you know, was talking about the importance of doing chores. I mean, here at Holden, we all do it, you know, and so because you participate in a family or a way to save money for something you really want, and this mom raised her hand and she said, well, Jan, what kind of chores can kids do? And I thought, well, our child was, you know, 3 or 4 or something. And so I said to her, well, you know, how old is your child? And she said, 13. And so I'm saying, well, a 13-year-old can, you know, clean their bedroom and clean the bathrooms and empty dishwashers and do laundry and put groceries away. I mean, mow the lawn and all of this. But I said, if you go home tonight and say you're going to start doing chores tomorrow, and here's 10 that you're going to start doing, you're going to meet with a lot of resistance, right? And so, you know, you want to start from a young age that these are expectations in a family. And even if they pout, even if they stomp, even if they complain, they need to do that. Okay. Another one is that it's best to resist raising children who feel entitled, to make them accountable for their behavior. Don't make excuses for them or cover for them. If a child gets into trouble with the school or with the law, then we're not going to cover up for them. We're going to make them face up to that responsibility. Doesn't mean we're not going to go with them. A friend of mine, her daughter in high school, lovely young woman, she's a teenager, we talked about them last night, she went to Nordstrom in Seattle. This is a family that's fairly, you know, they have resources. She did not need to be stealing from Nordstrom, but she went into one of the little, you know, changing rooms and stole a lot of underwear. And so she got caught, and her parents went with her to whatever she had to do. I don't know if she had to go to a judge or whatever it was, but she had to go to some kind of class. So they made her live up to the consequences of her behavior, but they went with her. They said, we're supporting you, nevertheless, you have to face this. And so as hard as it is, we need to do that. Okay, also, we need to resist raising children who feel entitled. We want to instill a sense of responsibility that if they lose a coat, we're not going to go out and buy a new one, right? We're not going to make them go cold, but we want them to be warm in the winter, but we're going to probably find a secondhand one or a hand-me-down, something like that. Also, one of the things that I know all of you do this, or probably most of you do this, we tell children that they are great and wonderful in just about everything they do. And I'm sorry to have to inform you of this, but all of the things that your children do aren't great and wonderful. In fact, it's fairly meaningless if we say to a child, oh, that's just the best thing in the whole world, this piece of art that you drew, or this is the best story anybody ever wrote, or you're the best basketball player I've ever seen. It's much more meaningful to a child if we recognize their strengths and help them focus on their strengths rather than saying they're just good at everything. We want them to recognize their strengths and their weaknesses and then to learn to rely on their strengths. And so if you have a child who's in music, plays the piano, and in basketball, and enjoys being on the basketball team, and you can recognize that your child really isn't very musically inclined, and that this is a, you know, really not a place where your child's going to continue to enjoy their time at the piano or whatever they're doing, it's better to say, you know, I think we should drop piano now and, you know, move on and focus on basketball, because that's where you're excelling. So you want them to recognize their strengths and their weaknesses, and then to focus and rely on their strengths. And children are fine with that. Also, we want to resist raising children who feel entitled to experience the consequences of their behavior. Within reason, of course, that if somebody spills milk on the floor, what's the consequence?
They clean it up.
Okay, if a child destroys school property, then they need to pay for it and clean it up. They need to clean up after themselves. Of course, we want to make it really clear that we love children unconditionally and that we'll help them out through these, but that they do ultimately have to be accountable and responsible. Another thing that I talked about it last night, but another area to think about is that as your children enter these ever-expanding environments, as they go from preschool to elementary school and elementary school into junior high school, if they go from going to the mall with you to going to the mall by themselves, when they start to learn how to manage money and learn how to use debit cards and all of that kind of thing, that we have to give them some rules and for how to manage these procedures and some expectations about that. Because a child who feels entitled thinks, and unfortunately, that they can just behave however they want in any kind of environment. And we have to make it clear to children that there are expectations and conditions for how to behave in certain situations. I mean, here's an example. When my son was, I don't know, maybe he was 10, I'd say 9 or 10, his grandparents had their 50th wedding anniversary. And so it was in the afternoon. It was probably, I don't know, between 4 and 6 in the evening at a hotel. And it was fairly formal. You know, there was a big buffet and tablecloths, and it was an environment that he had never, ever been in. And so I don't think that he really felt entitled to behave however he wanted, but he just didn't know what to do there. And so I think he came in and you know, I look back at myself, I said, why didn't I give him some skills for how to behave? But anyway, so he found a few buddies there, and they ate, and you know, they kind of hung around and realized it really wasn't an adult environment. So we were in a hotel. So what did they do entertaining themselves? They began to play around in the elevators of the hotel. And then at some point, the hotel manager came up to me, or my husband, I can't remember, and said, you know, we're having a problem with these 10-year-old boys. And so anyway, it was just, when I look back, but it wasn't, I don't know if it was such an entitlement thing, it was just this environment that they didn't know what their expectations were. And so then I have to tell the rest of the story. So that was my former husband's parents. And then when my parents had their 50th wedding anniversary, they had a little party, and they had a little combo that kind of played music. And so my son, he was a couple years older now, so he and his cousin sat behind the band. And they were, some Olympics were going on. So after each song, and they're trying to figure out how to kind of be part of it. So after each song, then they would hold up a number. So it would be like a 9 or a 10 or a 7. And it was fine. But it was their way of kind of getting involved, and they figured out a way. But anyway, so just to think about that, when they enter a new environment, how can you help them to be successful so they can manage that environment, that there are conditions and expectations, and how, you know, how age appropriate is really important. Okay, so any thoughts are about all of that? Does that all make sense to you? Yeah.
I have a question on the chores.
Mm-hmm.
Should there be a monetary reward, or should there not, or is it a mix?
Every time I go out and talk, and I really don't know. I'll give you my take on it, but I think every family has to kind of figure out their own way. But basically, something rankles me to pay money to children for taking a plate that they've dirtied and eaten from and put it on the counter, and they get money for that. Or this piece of underwear that they've worn and dropped on the floor that you pay them for taking it and dropping it in the laundry. I'm sorry. Those are just things that we all have to learn to do. But, and so we need to know what those expectations are of children and, you know, clearly communicate. I mean, I had a friend that, her kids, nobody left the kitchen until all the dishes were done. And everybody helped out. Nobody left the house for school unless the beds were made and your clothes were put away. I mean, she was so consistent about those kinds of things. But I do feel that children do need to have some kind of an allowance so that they can learn to manage money. And you can help them with that. And there's a variety of ways of doing that. And then there's chores that are over and above the call of duty. Like, and every family has their own, but cleaning the garage. I used to pay my daughter money for cleaning the cupboards, ironing, mowing the lawn, those kinds of big things, especially if they wanted to save for something. But the other thing I just want you to know, you have to know yourself, because I was the worst, because I'm kind of a random person. I have all these really good ideas, and, you know, we have chores, and then you get money for these difficult ones, and then you get a weekly allowance. And then, of course, I'd never have cash. And then I'd owe them money. And then I'd pay them my cash. And then I'd be borrowing from them. I just didn't work for them. So, but now, I wish I were in a different generation, because now I hear that parents, their kids have debit cards, and they have automatic withdrawals from the parents' account to the children's account. So there's all kinds of things that you can do now. But so every family is different. And it's interesting, because I used to say, you know, the other question is how much? And my rule of thumb was $1 per year. And then Susie Orman, you know, she's on NPR, or, I don't know, you know, that finance woman, she says 50 cents per year. So maybe that's better. I don't know.
Per year, per what?
For your allowance. So if you're five, you get $2.50.
Oh,
if you're or $5. Yes.
My oldest child always said yes, and my second child always said no.
Two chores or whatever.
And I fell into the trap of thinking one was a good boy and one was a bad boy.
Right.
And then I discovered that they do what they do because they need to get attention. Now, when one is good at saying yes and getting attention for that, it's hard to compete with that.
Right.
So the only way you get attention is by saying no.
Right.
So the other one was very resistant to doing things. I would threaten him with things and he wouldn't. The need was so deep that he couldn't even listen to reason.
Right.
Or being seduced into doing something.
Yeah.
He was going to hang on to his no. So it really helped me to understand that the deepest need is for recognition. What your child is doing is because they need some kind of recognition.
Right.
And when you have several children, each one will be different because each one finds their way of getting recognized differently than the others.
Yeah. And so the question is, what do you do about that? I mean, because everybody needs to participate in a family, right, to get things done. And
it just helped to know when he would get adamant about no, I would relate to his need for recognition.
Okay. Oh,
not
good.
To the no.
Right. Okay, very good. Yeah, that's great. Children do need attention and they do need recognition. And so, and it's so deep, just to reiterate what you said, that they'll get it in negative ways if they can't get it in positive ways. So, of course, we want to give them recognition, attention for the positive and pleasant things they do. And also, you know, that other thing, and this is just a short side, but the whole issue of children pleasing us and being proud of them and all of that. I mean, we want to be careful with that, to say, I'm so proud of you, or, I mean, if that's the worst thing that you do as a parent, I don't care. But you can see things like, you know, I saw that you put your dirty clothes in the laundry. I saw that you did that. Thank you. Okay, I didn't say that was so good or that was so great or that was so wonderful or that I'm pleased or that I'm proud. It's just that I recognize that. And said, I appreciate it, or thank you. Yeah.
Well, isn't it better, and I mean, it goes for everything from chores to piano, to recognize the effort rather than the actual product
Absolutely.
Or task or
whatever it is. At first, especially, I mean, if a child for the first time is making their bed and it's not perfectly made, of course you want to say, look at you, you made your bed all by yourself, good for you, thank you. Okay, but then I also don't want you to be, you know, as 2 or 3 weeks go by and there's, you know, you want it, you know, who, I don't even care, but anyway, if you really want it a certain way to say, you know, let me take a better example. Let's say the first time your child writes their name, okay, of course it deserves a posting on the refrigerator, right? Even if the lowercase t isn't crossed, right? And so then they're writing their name and, you know, the child's name is Tom and they don't put a capital T, they're just doing all lowercase. And so you just, oh, you know, of course we're so excited you learned to write your name. But at some point then you say, you know, now that you know how to write your name so well, it's important to know that the first letter of every name is always capitalized. And here's how you make a capital T. So in time you can make corrections. I don't want you to feel that you can't do that. Because children benefit from that, so yeah.
But effort. I guess what I meant was their effort should be increasingly
exactly.
more complex.
Because there's nothing worse. I mean, I think you, I being raised Norwegian, you know, you know, you just you're. Oh, I did this. They say, well, you should have done, you know, one. I don't know if that's all Norwegian, but anyway, there's always more you could do. It's like you pull the rug out from under them. We don't want to do that. Kids are in the process of learning, so we want to give them recognition for what they are doing. Yeah.
It's also easy, like he was saying, to think that the compliant child is better than the resistant child.
Right.
And, and when we think of what do we want for our kids as adults,
mm-hmm.
we don't necessarily want them
that's
to do everything
right.
they're told to do. We want them sometimes to say, well, wait a minute, why should I do that? And sometimes we have to be willing to give them
yeah.
reasons, even if we think, I think, you know, we have this idea of the parent whose child does everything they say, but
mm-hmm.
we've decided not to do that as parents. We're not Beaver Cleaver's dad who comes home and reads
right.
the paper and gives orders and that's
mm-hmm.
all they are.
Mm-hmm.
We want a different relationship. So we also, sometimes that takes more effort on our part to mm-hmm. kind of tell them why. Or
right, tell
them
why and do a little negotiation and compromise. And certainly, because that's consideration for the child. And I think that's really, really important. On the other, and I'm going to give you some options later, but on the other hand, when it's an issue of values or safety, I mean, if your child at age 8 refuses to go to church or refuses to, what would be another value, do their homework, I mean, those are not negotiable options. There's some negotiation within those values, but that you can work with the child, but we don't want to jeopardize your values. When you get into teens, it's a little different. Also, safety issues. I mean, you know, you can't compromise not wearing seatbelts. I'm sorry. You can be as mad as you want for as long as you want, but you're still going to wear a seatbelt. So those are the things that we have to stay on top of. Okay, so what are the pitfalls to raising a child who feels entitled? First of all, I mean, I'm going to run through these fairly quickly. They don't learn to work and earn for themselves what they need or want. I mean, if they get if everything just comes to them, then they're not going to learn how to figure out how to work and earn that for themselves. But the saddest thing for me is that a child who lives an entitled life doesn't get to use their mind adequately. That if everything just comes to them, if everything is just given to them, then they don't have to figure out how to manage environments and how to manage themselves. And I'll give you a drastic example. I have an aunt who has worked really hard all her life and very frugal and will leave her grandchildren each a considerable trust fund. I don't know exactly what it is. But her grandson is a nice guy. You'd like him. However, I think he's about 27. He's in community college, and he has a part-time job, and he lives above his parents, an apartment in his parents' garage. And he really isn't moving into the adult world because he knows he will receive this large sum of money upon his grandmother's death. And it's sad to me because he's a bright, capable person, and those skills he is not using adequately. And so, and to me that's sad. So, and I don't know, and I don't blame anybody. I don't know why for sure, But it's sad to see that he hasn't used his gifts optimally. Okay, another thing is that children who feel entitled don't learn to grasp the reins of their own life and take charge of it. They are looking for somebody else to kind of take care of them. Also, they don't learn to manage the urge for instant gratification. And let me talk a little bit about that. That when children are babies, we instantly gratify them, right? If they're hungry, we feed them. If they want social interaction, we interact with them socially. If they need to be held and rocked, I mean, we do whatever 24/7 that they need. And then they get to be about 18 months. And we do that for children because obviously they're very fragile. They can't manage their own emotions. I mean, they can't bring themselves to contentment. So they're very dependent, and we provide that for them. But when they get to be about 18 months or so, they're developed emotionally enough to be denied instant gratification on a small scale. But it's hard for us, right? Because you've got 3 cookies sitting here and they've eaten 2, and so you're going to say no, you can't have a third, and you put it away. And this cute darling little thing is going to erupt into a temper tantrum, and you think this child is going to be irreparably damaged emotionally if I deprive him of this one more cookie. And I'm here to tell you that that is not the case. That you've done enough in the first 18 months of their life, that being denied this cookie, they will be fine. But they're insulted because it's like, you have given me everything I need every day of my life, and now you're telling me no? How can you do this? You're mean. I don't like you. Go away, mommy. You've seen that happen. And so we've got to say to ourselves, this is an okay thing to happen. And so let me get into the research a little bit about this. So what researchers did was, I have to get out my notes here because I want to, it's a long list of the benefits of teaching children to delay gratification. Okay, here it is. So what, and you may have read about this research, I think it was on Oprah, it's pretty much out there. Although I have to say, once I heard it was on Oprah, I did go into the original research studies, and it was interesting because I was here a year ago, May, and Tom found an article in the New Yorker magazine. It's May 18th, it's not on my handout. I have a handout if you want to get it from me, and here's a handout to how to figure out how to find me so I can email it to you. But anyway, it was in the New Yorker magazine, and so we brought it out at Holden and talked about it. But anyway, here's how it went. So the researchers said to children, here, for 4-year-olds, here is a marshmallow for you, and you can eat it if you like. But if you wait 20 minutes, you can have 2 marshmallows, okay? So, I mean, 20 minutes is a long time in the life of a 4-year-old, right? And so some 4-year-olds just, you know, immediately ate it. They couldn't stand it, and that was it. But other 4-year-olds figured out strategies for how to manage themselves for the 20 minutes to wait so that they could have 2 marshmallows. And some of them would, you know, they'd turn their back like this, and then or they kind of touch the marshmallow, you know, or they'd sing a song, I'm waiting to eat my marshmallow. So they developed these strategies. And so then what the researchers did was follow these children into their early teens to see what the outcomes were for the children who instantly gratified themselves and the children who could delay gratification. And here's what the research tells us, that children who can delay gratification are more academically and more socially competent. They are more verbally fluent. They are more rational, more attentive, more planful, more able to do well with frustration and stress. They did better on their SATs. The reason they do SATs is because it's very measurable, right? They were more cognitively resourceful and cognitively more flexible. They exhibited self-control in frustrating situations. They were less likely to yield to temptation. They were more intelligent, less distractible when trying to concentrate. They were more responsive to reason. They used and were more responsive to reason. So we all want those things for our children. So when our children are screaming and yelling or pouting or stomping around because they're not being gratified instantly, I want you to think back to this list, okay? And I want you to do it responsibly. But because there's sometimes we should, I'll get your question in just a minute. We should, you know, help our children or do for our children whatever what they want. But there's sometimes when we know that it's going to upset them to say no or to help them at least get what they want and delay it, and the long-term outcomes are going to be better for our children rather than detrimental. Yes?
So what I'm curious about is whether those outcomes would be the same for children who have their gratification delayed for them versus children who would choose to delay their own.
It's a cause or effect.
So if the parent said, I'm not going to give you this marshmallow, I'm going to make you wait till tomorrow or for 20 minutes, and they held it at bay, is that
right.
What you're saying?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
The desire to delay your own gratification for some
reason
versus,
right,
this is good for you, so I'm going to delay it for you.
Right. And I don't know.
Yeah.
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 So that's a good question.
But isn't it that the skill to do that comes when that's modeled for you?
Absolutely.
Learned from that, so it may not be.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, point about all of this is that we as adults who care for children need to model delay of gratification. And you all do it. But you just need to bring it out in the forefront for your children. I mean, if you're going out to buy a car, you don't just walk into a car dealership and write a check and, oh, I just love it. And so I don't even need it, or I don't even, you know, it's not in my budget, but boy, I really like it, and so I'm going to buy it. No, we don't do that. Most of us research, you know, various automobiles, or we'll save and delay and plan for it and study and all of those things. And so when you do that, you need to think out loud in front of your children to say, we're really considering buying a new car, and here's the process that I'm going through, so that they can see how you do that. Or if you see a beautiful dress and you really like it, to say, boy, you know, I really love that beautiful dress, but I've got a couple in my closet, and so I'm not going to buy that. So think out loud as you plan for that, so your children can see that and the benefits of that. So, okay. Another research that was done on this, it's kind of the out of sight, out of mind. I think you were talking about it. That in another research experiment, what they did was wrap up object in a package. Okay, and so they had three. They had a toy that the children had to wait for. They had a package that was wrapped up, and then they had another toy that was put away. Okay, and obviously, if they saw the toy right here, that was the most difficult to resist, all right? If it was wrapped in a package, it was a little easier to resist. If it was put away where the child couldn't see it, it was most easy to resist. And so I think about that around the peer issue, because if you live in an affluent community and other kids have cars at 16 and designer clothes, and you're trying to teach your child that this is not part of our lifestyle, it's going to be harder, because your children are confronted with those things every single day of their life, and so it's harder to resist. And you know, we can see that really in the American community. Another part of this that I want to explain, there's a lot, but to understand that parenting is dynamic. And so there's this constant turnover of power and control from the parent to the child. That, of course, when children are little, they're very dependent on us. And then as they, you know, travel the developmental years, there's this turnover until children become dependent and we send them out the door. And so when they're little, of course, they're very dependent on us for food, right? So we buy the food, we prepare the food, we serve the food, we feed the children. And so then at some point, children begin to choose, you know, what they want on the table to eat, and they take more charge of food in the home and that kind of thing. And then at some point, you might be busy getting ready to go out to work in the evening if you have a job like mine where you work in the evening, and your child's standing there and saying, they're 14, and they're saying, I'm hungry. Where, you know, Finn, I need something to eat before you go out to work. And then you say, let me introduce you to the refrigerator. You know, and so now the child becomes responsible for maybe not buying their food, but at least fixing their own peanut butter sandwich, you know. And so it's that constant turnover. So when kids are little, they come home from first grade with homework to do, of course, we help them with it. We may not do it for them, but we guide them through it and help them put it in a backpack and have it ready for school the next day. And then at some point, we withdraw that support, that once they become fifth or sixth grade, that hopefully they're on their own doing their own homework assignments. So, you know, we have to kind of be aware of that, because if not, you'll have a seventh grader or an eighth grader saying, Dad, do my algebra homework for me. And you're like, can I do algebra still, you know? And so anyway, just think about that constant turnover, and at some point you need to step back and let them grasp the reins of their own life. Another thing that I want you to think about, and you know, these are just, there's no right or wrong way. I just want you to think about this. So let's say it's in your mind that when your child turns 16, that they will have some kind of used car to drive. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's what your family's decision is. So now let's think about that a little bit further. So who's going to pay for the insurance? And who's going to pay for the gas? I don't know what your family will decide, but you need to think about that. And so if your idea is that, yes, indeed, you will buy your child a used car to drive when they're 16, but that they have, that's their responsibility to provide insurance and gas. That's your plan for your child, okay? I want you to start talking about that with your kids at about age, between age 10 and 12. Okay? So let them know that that is the expectation that you have, so that, you know, when they're on their 16th birthday, they get these used cars to drive, and then you say, well, now you've got to figure out how to pay insurance and gas. Not fair, okay? When you send your child off to college, let them know that you have some expectations, that you need to see their grades, because you're really not legally able to see their grades. Did you know that? And but yet, if you're the person paying for that college education, the expectation, I would think, would be that you need to see how they're doing in college, okay? And that also that you know where they're living, and that they have what their expectation is for graduation, okay? Because some kids will go 6, 7, 8 years, and you're writing checks, and, you know, it goes on forever. So the point is that you need to inform children early on of those expectations that you have. Okay, so before I go finish up, I also want to say that there are clearly some entitlements that children do have. All right, and here's my list, and I don't know that this is the entire list, but this is mine. That children are entitled to have parents who look out for their mental and physical health. That children are entitled to have a place to sleep, food to eat, and to be warm and to have shelter. That children are entitled to develop their competencies, that we want to support them on the road to do that. That children are able to make choices for themselves that are appropriate to their age and development. That children are entitled to have fun and play and to learn, and to have a childhood, that we're not going to rob them of that by, there's many ways that we can do that. Children are entitled to have positive relationships with family and friends. Children are entitled to feel that they belong to the family and to a community. children are entitled to have, to be protected physically. That's definitely what we do as parents, to see that they're safe and protected because they can't protect themselves. But all that we don't leave them to their own devices. We look out for them. We put them in seat belts. We take them to driver's education classes before they learn to drive. But also that we protect them emotionally. That if your dog dies, that we just don't say, oh, don't worry about the dog dying, we'll get another one. No, we'll cry with the child, we'll have a little funeral, we'll feel sad with the child, we'll put the dog's picture up. So we provide emotional protection for the child. If your child has a major disappointment, a breakup with a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or doesn't make the basketball team, that we're there to protect them emotionally and be with them emotionally. So those are some of the entitlements that children definitely do have. Also, children are entitled to have parents who respect them, who don't oppress or overpower them. Children are entitled to have parents who are a conduit or a part or their partner on the road to independence. Children are entitled to have parents who don't use drugs or abuse alcohol, because we can't be effective when we're addicted to drugs or alcohol. Children are entitled to have parents who have good mental health and who are responsible, law-abiding citizens. So those are some of the entitlements that children do have. It's important for us all to think about that. Okay, so in finishing up, when your children come to you and say, I just have to have this third pair of designer jeans. You've bought me two pair, and I just have to have the third pair. Okay, so you have four options, all right? Whenever your children come to you with anything, with a need or a want, and hopefully they can learn to know the difference between the two, there's four options to run through your mind, okay? One is to ask yourself, should I step in and provide it? And sometimes you will. It may not be the designer jeans, but it could be something else. Your child wants to go to camp. Your child wants a new bicycle. Your child wants to spend the night with a friend. Sometimes you will just say yes, and that's absolutely fine. That's one option. Okay. The second option is to say a child wants to do something. They have a request. And you teach, train, and guide your child to do that. And here's an example. When my son was between 7th and 8th grade, I think it was, he wanted to go to France with his French class to spend 6 weeks. Who doesn't want to do that? Sign me up. So, you know, you're thinking, well, this would be a good experience. And you're thinking, there's the airplane fare plus the this and the that and the this. So then I said to Alan, I said, you know, Alan, I'm happy to provide for the airline ticket, and I will pay half of the expenses. But you have to figure out a way. It could have been between 8th and 9th grade. I can't remember. But anyway, you have to figure out the other way, the other whatever it was, $500. I don't remember. And I can remember him kind of going, ugh, you know. So one of the things we picked out for him to do was to clean the cars on Saturday. So I showed him how to wash the cars and get the vacuum out. And he did the two cars, and he came in and he was like, that was really hard work. I just don't know if I can do this. So I'm thinking, oh, I really want him to go to France, you know. But anyway, I mean, he pulled it together and he did that. But, you know, and it was a good learning experience and he did it. But you hope that they rise to the occasion, and he did, but sometimes they won't. Anyway, teach, train, guide children. And that's saying yes, but I'm going to figure out and help you on your own to get what it is that you want. Okay, the next one is to do nothing. To say, you know, if you want that third pair of designer jeans, I'm not going to help you with getting that. But if you want to figure out a way to get it on your own, it's okay with me. Okay? That's the third option. The fourth option is to say, absolutely not. That is not okay. That would never be okay with me. As you know, that is not what our family does. Be careful about saying as long as you live in this house, because teenagers will leave. So be careful about that. And so when you say, this is not going to happen, don't say to your children, sweetheart, no. we're not going to do that. No, and you're not going to say, no, that will not happen. We're not going to do that. We're going to stand up strong. I'll get your question. And say clearly, using clear, firm body language, that is not what happens in this family. And you're also going to say the following. You can cry, and you can be mad, and you can be sad about this as long as you like. And I'm going to be right here with you as long as you're sad and mad and unhappy about this. But when you're done being sad and mad and pouting, my answer will still be the same. We will not be doing this in this family. Okay? And so, and it builds their character, right? The long-term outcomes are going to be good, right? Yes.
Yeah, we've got a kid who we can say no to, and he'll say, he'll be sad, but he'll walk away. And we have a child who will continue to ask why. And my question is, at what age and how do you go about working in your reasoning? I mean, typically,
yeah.
You know, they aren't always going to stand, but how
right.
much do you owe them in
okay.
terms of an explanation?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. One explanation. Mm-hmm. One explanation is all you need. And because there are those kids that they just keep at you and keep at you. And so you want to give the same. Okay, so my daughter wanted to go to Ocean Shores on an unchaperoned weekend when she was a sophomore in high school. The answer is absolutely no. That would never be okay. But I'm telling you, she's persistent. And so what you do in monotone, say, that is unsafe, I cannot allow you to do it. But everybody's doing it. That is unsafe. I cannot allow you to do it. But, well, seniors are going and they're responsible and you're just the meanest mother.
Yeah, right.
What was
that's
my
not
line?
Safe.
Not safe. I can't. And I can't allow you to do it. And you just keep. I am not saying this is easy.
Right.
Okay. And the other thing I'm not saying is the other thing too is that there's times when we say no too quickly. Okay. And then parents will say, "Well, I said no, and so I got to stick with it." No. If you said no and you reconsidered and you felt you said it too quickly, you with dignity can say, "I have reconsidered." You're not going to say, "Just go, just do whatever." We're not going to do that either. But if there's a time, because we will all say no too quickly, not about Ocean Shores, but about something else. And so then you can, with dignity, change your mind, because that's a modeling process too. But yeah, and those kids are, you know, there's a book called The Difficult Child written by Stanley Turecki, and he calls those kids mother killers. And so I said that in a parenting class one time, and about 10 minutes after I had said that, a dad kind of raised his hand in the back of the room, and he said, "Do you think my child's going to kill my wife?" It's figurative, but they wear you out. And you love them, and they're persistent, and they'll meet their goals. You're just really glad when they leave home at 18. I mean, you love them. But anyway, I'm going to end by saying this, that I really think it's important, too, because all of your children, I would assume, come from some level of privilege. And with privilege comes responsibility, and so please teach your children that. But also, I know that every single person in this room comes at some point from very humble beginnings. All your families were immigrants into this country. Tell your children your family stories. I had the opportunity to do this a couple years ago. We celebrated the Hedstrom Homestead Centennial Reunion near Hedinger, North Dakota. And we went to the homestead where the sod house was that my grandfather built when he came from Sweden. And that it's no longer there. The family farm is still there. But we stood there on that prairie, and my kids, knew for a fact that my mother, who's still living and was with us that day, came from very, very humble beginnings, and it was daunting to them. And the family has prospered, but it wasn't because they were cute. No, it was because it was hard work that got us there. And your kids need to hear those stories. It's like, oh yeah, you know, you walk 3 miles in a snowstorm and all that. They need to hear those stories. Yes.
How to not make the child feel that they're bad for wanting. You can say that really sounds like fun, and there are reasons why it won't work.
Absolutely, yeah. You want to affirm the child to say, you can wish for that and you can hope for that, or you know, you can get it or earn it, and it's not because you're bad, but we're here to help you anyway. Yeah, we want to have goodwill with children, and we don't want them to feel bad about this, because mostly we've been born into privilege and this feeling of entitlement. But anyway, so there's certain things you can do, there's certain things you can't do. Anyway, here's a handout if you want to receive, this is for the whole week, how to contact me, so, and I will send you a Word document with a handout on entitlement. Thank you all very much.